Tuesday, August 17th. Where has the summer gone? The lovely golden summer. My lie in the hammock time. My read a mystery book time. Here suddenly, August is more than half over, and the list is long of things that I'd meant to do, headed by rest and learn to water ski, those not crossed off. Really reached the White House about 1:15 in the morning, for it was a short night, and I woke up early and worked with Liz before I had a meeting with Larry O'Brien and Mike Manatos and Paul Southwick and Liz to talk about how the beautification bills were faring in the House and Senate. There are four of them, all relating to highways. One of them is a goner, so everybody agrees. The one about scenic roads are roads to historic sites. The others about billboards and junkyards, and 3% of the money allocated for planting along interstate highways have a better chance, but are laggard late in the summer, have no ardent champion, and are being consumed by the argument about where does the money come from, whether from the Highway Trust Fund, which is an inviolate sort of a sacred cow to the congressman, or from the general budget, and Lyndon is standing in front of it like Horatius at the bridge, not wanting the budget to be raised any more than he can possibly prevent. Find the money anywhere else. Larry and Mike suggested a meeting here at the White House of the heads of the Senate Committee and the House Committee that are reporting out the bills, having the hearings on them. Tea with their wives to thank them for anything that they could, in their best judgment, do about them. I readily agreed and said let's set it up for tomorrow, Wednesday, so as to catch those members of the Tea to Tea Club Tuesday to Thursday. How we used to laugh when we were in the Senate at people who went away for weekends Thursday afternoon and came back Monday afternoon. And this summer, I can think of a time or two when a very hard-working president has done it, but he's also taken his work with him and packed more into those 3 days than any human ought to. After an hour and a half of talking with Larry and Mike, it was a rather dismaying conclusion that there'd been much talk in the country and in the papers, and not much action on the Hill on the beautification proposals, and we must try at least to get them considered before the mad rush to leave, the late August fever, set in. Prospects not good, but we'd try. After all, it took 20 years for Medicare. Then I had a look at Linda Bird's new clothes. She takes to heart too much this idea of economy. How odd for a parent to say that. Quite the opposite is true of Lucy. I had lunch with Bess in my room, sandwich and salad. Then, after the beauty parlor, my old friend Mr. Pear again. A delicious hour's nap. And then before my date with Walter Ruther, I got a hurried call from Lucy. Oh, couldn't I please come? No, later wouldn't do. Just now. It would only be a minute. I just had to. So I went upstairs to see her. And there she was in Ashton's office, a sight I shall never forget, in a little girl dress, midi blouse and very short skirt, freckles painted across her nose, two front teeth blacked out, an upturned sailor hat with a bobbing daisy on the top of it, standing knock-kneed and pigeon-toed with a big grin on, holding on to a great big boy whose trousers were rolled up to his knees so that they looked like knickers, who had on a silly hat and a sillier grin, and was clutching a lollipop that weighed about 25 pounds. I forgot to mention Lucy had a rag doll in her hands. Oh, Mama, I just had a little time to goof off, and we thought we'd do something funny. She's brought laughter and sparkle. Was there ever a gayer little girl in the White House? Been back to the Truman balcony to meet Walter Ruther. We had iced tea and I listened to him mostly. I'd wanted to talk to him about beautification. I'd wanted to enlist his own aid as a powerful leader in helping getting the bills passed, and his consideration in case his auto workers ever wanted to leave a footprint of beauty in their nation's capital, of a donation to the cherry tree planting program that we have. Well, it ended by him doing all the talking, and he was delightful. He told me about how he and his children and his neighbors had had their own anti-pollution crusade on the little creek that ran behind his house. They'd spent 3 Saturdays cleaning it out, getting everything from a tin can to an old refrigerator out of it, putting in retainer logs here and there on the bank, planting out grass to prevent erosion, some willows or shrubs here and there. He told me what condition the union was in when he'd first taken it over in his first executive committee that he'd had to deal with, or some such organization, which was heavily loaded with communists, and how he'd combated them. He told me about setting up a sort of extra labor organization as a sort of Supreme Court to pass on their controversies. The members had no relation to labor. They were educators, professional people, ministers. Apparently, they sort of acted as a brake on the actions of labor people who knew that they might be reviewed by the public. And most interestingly, he told me about what he thought the new role of labor would be now that labor had won so many of the things they had battled for. He thought they should now use their influence, their power, for things that did not relate only to their own constituency. Things like beautification, medical research, better community planning. A most delightful man. He uses the phrase, the great society, without self-consciousness and with the sort of enthusiasm that makes you think it is within the reach of America today. The net of our hour and a half long conversation, besides a lot of pleasure for me, was word that he would help on getting across to any members of the committee who might care what labor thought, their hopes in favor of the beautification legislation, and that he would think about a donation to the national capital. And he wanted me to think about being chairman of an art project. I invited Aunt Ellen to come out on the porch to meet him. I almost wondered if she thought she was going to meet somebody with horns and a tail. He left just as the cars were driving up for Lyndon's stag dinner for businessmen and labor leaders, one of those talk and write dinners that cut across the whole spectrum of our business world and labor. It had been a busy day for Lyndon, the Congressional Leadership Breakfast, and then the fourth anniversary celebration of the Alliance for Progress, which had been in the East Room. He sent me word to join him if I could. I'd had to forego because I was Larry et al. And then a series of off-the-record things, and this stag dinner. I wonder if there have been many presidents who have tried to explore so vigorously the feeling of the people they try to lead. He is a searching, determined, hopeful man, and a never-ending surprise to me. Aunt Ellen and I had a little visit. Her days have been well planned and carried out by Patsy, two of the White House, some relatives in for lunch with her on the third floor. She's going to the Smithsonian and the National Gallery. Patsy's being invaluable, all making this a red-letter trip for her. And of course, I'm seeing that she visits Dorothy Torito and does some tapes about her memories of my father, my childhood, anything that might be pertinent. And I'd expected to have a quiet dinner on the balcony with her and Patsy. But Mary Ellen Munroney had called me. She's having a dinner in her lovely backyard. The prospect was too inviting. I asked Aunt Ellen to please excuse me. And with Lyndon having a stag dinner, this was my one opportunity to go out. How I do miss going out, not having to bother about seating people, and remembering to tell somebody tomorrow that the roast was not good, or let's serve the bread hotter. And Mary Ellen's is one of my favorite places in town to go. The Stu Symingtons were there. Marie Harriman, without Averill, I do not know where on this wide world he is. Clark, without Marnie. The Paul Nitzes. Cece Carusi and her husband. We had cocktails outside, and then dinner by candlelight in the patio by the swimming pool. Mary Ellen has the most beautiful lighting. I wish I could give Lyndon for a birthday present just such a setting in that sweet little brick patio at the Haywood with its simple overhanging bulb gathering all the insects. It was a gay, sophisticated, talkative group. Not as young as some of Lyndon's gatherings are, but just my cup of tea. I sat close to Marie Harriman and enjoyed hearing her talk about when she was an art dealer, the astounding prices of paintings. She'd known Mary Lasker many years ago. There's something very generous and outgoing about her. I had not really known the Harrimans well, and this year I feel I'm getting to. I like him simply because he manages to remain so very vigorous and handsome in his 70s. I'd meant to leave at 10, but it was too much fun. It was 11 before I could tear myself away, and Lennon was upstairs picking up a nuggets of information about the dinner for Marvin and Jack.